1-1 to Iglesias. Fly ball left field. He put a charge into this one. Way back and gone.
Wow.
Jose Iglesias hit a bomb to left center field. His third. The 3-2. Swinging a fly ball left field. Way back in left and gone. Three-run shot for Cabrera. Swinging a fly ball left field. Fairly deep, but that's where Upton is. He'll make the catch in front of the warning track. Wilmuto flies out. Tigers with a big seven-run fifth inning that featured three home runs take game one of this two-game series.
Ramirez takes off, swinging to his throw down. And the ball's off the glove of Ibar, and scoring is Lindor. It's almost as though Ricky took his eye off the ball and was trying to throw before he caught it, well, maybe. Base hit in the right field. They put her out there. They're going to wave him home. Marquez is thrown out in time. The Indians take the lead. Carlos Santana delivers with an RBI single to right field in the ninth inning.
It's far and away the leader on the club.
To left field, Davis over. Just shy of the warning track, he brings it down and the game is over. And the Indians have run their win streak to 11 in a row. Their longest streak since 1982.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
You know, I woke up today and I said to my wife, she went to bed last night early, and she said, Indians win? They still got the streak going? I said, yeah. I said, 11. I said, 11-game winning streak. It is their longest streak since 1982, and I'm feeling pretty good. You know, I'm feeling pretty proud. Giving the wife a little bit of the 4-1-1 on the tribe and their historical streaks and all that stuff. Yeah, longest streak since 82. Remember what you were doing in 1982 and, you know, thinking about how cool that is. And she throws back at me, yeah, I know, and one more, and it'll be the longest since 1934. wait, what? How did you know that? And I think it was 34. Was it 34? Kush, did you hear if they win 12 in a row, is that right? Would it be the longest since 1934?
That sounds right, but I'm double-checking that, but good on her.
She threw that back at me with so much confidence and so quickly. I was just like, wait, what? You know, and obviously she wakes up earlier than I do, and she must have had, you know, the early morning news on or something, and because I know she's not going to sports websites to find that out. Somebody on TV must have said that, and because she just threw it at me like she was real confident. All I know is what's happening right now is just all kind of trippy in terms of Cleveland sports. The city that fostered Believeland. You know, the 30 for 30 on ESPN, that was terrible, by the way. I thought it was a really, really poor production given how much material they had to work with. But despite that, the team that, or the city that was featured with all the losing now wins its first championship of any kind since 64. And its baseball team is setting all kinds of franchise records, for longest winning streaks in an individual season, or at least pushing up on them. The late longest since 82 now, maybe the longest since 34 if they can bring out the brooms again.
I'm still looking for that one, but I did already find that the longest win streak in Indians history happened twice at 13 in 1942 and 51.
There you go. I do know that. So, you know what I wonder? I wonder if maybe she actually heard it incorrectly, because if you think about it, Jim, 1982 was exactly 34 years ago. So when I told her it was the longest streak since 82, maybe she heard that and then heard in 34, in terms of 34 years, maybe that's what she thought she heard, you know, that the next one would be the longest one in 34 years. So maybe she threw it out there with such incredible confidence and you know, with matter-of-factness, but maybe she actually didn't have the fact. Maybe she actually didn't have the exact. So, well, hold on. So if the longest is 11... Or excuse me, the longest you just said was what, 13?
13 games happened twice.
13 games happened twice, what years?
42 and 51.
All right, what did they ever have a 12 game winning streak then? Let's find out.
I'm looking that up, and I started by going to a good old baseballreference.com. You're basically your online encyclopedia, okay, since they don't print these things anymore. I'm in 1934, and they must have been confusing that one, because the longest winning streak I see in 1934 was a six gamer at one point.
Okay, well, here's what I've got. I don't have anything on a 12 gamer, so maybe she just kind of mixed it up and thought, you know, that 1934 was the next thing. I do see exactly what you see. Their longest record ever is 13. Longest streak ever is 13 in 1942 and 1951, as you point out. This 11-gamer is again, well, it doesn't say if it's their second longest ever. So maybe there was one in between. I just don't know. The Indians won their 11th straight. The last 11-game win streak was there. Yeah, they just don't say whether there was ever a 12-game winning streak. So just kind of curious, and we're going to follow this and ride this thing as far as it goes. Really cool treat today. We're going to talk to a couple of baseball guys, a little bit about these red hot Indians, the hottest team in baseball. Matt Underwood, the voice of Cleveland Indians baseball on TV on Sports Time Ohio, a part of course, Fox Sports Ohio, is going to join us at 4:05. Then at about 4:35 or so, we are hoping to make our connection with Anthony Fennick to talk a little more Tigers baseball. And the reason I say hoping is because obviously the Tigers are playing baseball now, and it's the bottom of the fifth. It's an 8-2 lead, and I guess it's moving kind of slowly. But you know what? You know how those things go. He might have to hustle into the clubhouse and do interviews following that game. So we're hoping to get Anthony Fennick to talk about the Tigers, who are rebounding nicely from the sweep at the hands of the Indians by beating the Marlins yesterday and now leading them 8-2 in the fifth inning today. So hopefully, and that pretty much is up in the air, just dependent upon when the game ends, right, Jim?
Right, exactly. That game right now, bottom of the fifth, Tigers up 8-2. Yeah, they have basically put the clamps on them right in the first inning. It started with bases loaded, nobody out, and usually those things are good.
While you were reading baseballreference.com, I already said all that.
Okay. So.
I can always tell when you're researching something at the point when you repeat exactly what I just said. But that's okay. The point being, it is nice that they are rebounding from the sweep at the hands of the Indians by beating the Marlins twice in a row. Of course, that's assuming they do finish this one off. So we've got a lot of baseball to do today. Matt Underwood at 4:05. Hopefully Anthony Fennick coming up at 4:35 to talk a little bit more. There's a really interesting baseball story to get. And by the way, I know there's a lot of basketball to talk about, too. A lot of basketball, including the Kevin Durant sweepstakes. We only had a few minutes on that yesterday. Why? Well, obviously why, because of the breaking news. It was kind of a different show yesterday with the deaths of Pat Summitt, the legendary Tennessee women's coach, and Buddy Ryan, the architect of the 46 defense for the 1985 Bears. So we had all of that yesterday, just a different kind of show. Today, we want to get back into the actual grind of the sports seasons. And for baseball, it's obvious. For basketball, it is the off season. But Friday, in fact, we want to call it midnight tomorrow night, it is the start of free agency season. And that is sometimes as exciting as the basketball season, just depending upon what team you are rooting for. If your team just won the championship, you'd say that was pretty exciting. But if your team is in the place where they've got to sign some free agents just to get back to respectability, this is the most exciting time as you try to make your club better. Now, a couple of notes on NBA free agency before we get into anything else. First of all, LeBron James has done what he said he would do. He has opted out of his $24 million player option, and that means he is going to go ahead and sign a much, much larger deal. He was slated to earn $24 million. He becomes a free agent officially on July 1st, on Friday. It doesn't matter, of course. We know he has already said he is staying. So he's going to re-sign. He said he has no intentions of going anywhere else. This is just a matter of maximizing his earning potential, which is code for I'm going to be as greedy as I can be. Not that that's critical of him, because that's how they are all doing it. They're all being as greedy as they can be. There is a lot more money to be had in the NBA now due to the expanding salary caps, larger television contracts, etc., and guys want their max dollars. I don't have any problem with LeBron James opting out and then cashing in. Now the teams are set to spend, with the salary cap rising to $94 million, he's going to make a lot more money in a max deal. And I don't have any problem with that at all. What will likely happen, of course, is that he will get a max salary of roughly $30 million by the time it's all said and done. And that's going to be, you know what, absolutely appropriate given how much money he makes for his franchise and obviously for the NBA. The problem with that, as you know, is the dominoes that fall over. Because when the max contract goes up to a number like that, that a guy like LeBron James earns and certainly deserves, it puts other guys who deserve absolutely nowhere near that into categories of earnings that that they just don't belong in. And to me, it just cheapens the game. And I know that's kind of oxymoronic because we're talking about spending astronomical amounts of money to say something cheapens the game when it's actually making the game more expensive. But from the vantage point that I'm talking about, it just cheapens the value of a star player. For example, Harrison Barnes, Golden State Warriors, going to be a free agent. And listening to some of the you know, NBA talks, inside talks, and kind of monitoring the price tags that various guys are going to be worth, Harrison Barnes, who was absolutely awful in the NBA Finals when the Warriors needed him just to be competent, I think it's fair to say, right? When the Warriors needed him to be competent, perhaps, to beat the Cavaliers in that very, very tight seven-game series. He was terrible. Because of the salary cap increases, and because every team is going to have a bunch of money to spend, many of them over $20 or $30 million in cap space to spend, and when I say many, I mean like two-thirds of them, somebody's going to give Harrison Barnes something that he doesn't deserve even more than his place on the Olympic team. Somebody's going to give him about $20 million a year. $20 million a year for a role player that, quite honestly, like I said, really just wet the bed when his team needed him most. Just to give you an example of what the buying market is going to be like for him, the Philadelphia 76ers are already targeting him, saying they're going to make a serious push for him at 12:01 a.m. They want Harrison Barnes to come to Philadelphia to play with, you know, a bunch of these young guys, and I don't know which ones they're going to keep. We know about the Philadelphia process being blown up when Sam Hinkie got fired or was forced to resign, whatever the case might be. They drafted three of the same player 3 years in a row by getting Nerlens Noel, Joel Embiid, and then Jahlil Okafor. They are in just a strange situation, and now they're going to try to bring Harrison Barnes in, and they're going to pay him probably $20 million or so. And if the Warriors want to keep him, they might have to go above that. And he doesn't deserve half that from a basketball standpoint, just a performance standpoint. That's the problem I have with the NBA free agency cap, having that max on it, and then everybody kind of having to spend the money. Because, the you know, part B about all that is, you know, Golden State's first job, if you will, the Warriors' first priority is to try to lure Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant, who is just one of the top three players in basketball, joining forces with Curry and Thompson, and who else would still be there? They'd probably lose Bogut, let him go. They, of course, would let Harrison Barnes sign somewhere else. Iguodala, they'd probably be able to re-sign. And obviously Draymond Green. Adding Kevin Durant to that group would instantly make the Warriors heavier title favorites to come back and take the Cavaliers down in another rematch next year. No question about it. And again, that's fine. But because of the circumstances regarding the cap, if they don't get Kevin Durant, they're probably going to end up throwing a whole bunch of that money they would have given to him to Harrison Barnes, who doesn't deserve it. And any team that does give it to a guy like Harrison Barnes, and I'll give you another name. You know who's going to cash in big time? Somebody's going to cash in based upon a couple of big games in a playoff series that was national. In fact, those games were international, because he plays for the Toronto Raptors. So in that Canada versus UA, Toronto, Cleveland, Eastern Conference final matchup, Bismack Biyombo shot blocked and rebounded his way into probably a $20 million contract. Dude averages somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 or 7 points and 8 or 9 rebounds a game.
And let's not forget that he was mainly in the starting lineup in those East Finals because their main center, Valanciunas, was out hurt.
Exactly right. But he came in and played.
Yeah, credit where credit's due. He did play well, especially in those games in Toronto.
In Toronto, games 3 and 4. And in one of them, he had 26 rebounds. In another one, he had, like, I don't know, 20. He had two monster games. And he was doing very much on the offensive end what Tristan Thompson does to other teams for the Cavaliers. Just making guys so frustrated because they thought they got a stop. And then, dang it, they got the offensive rebound. They get another 24. He did it again and again and again, not to mention shot blocking and putting up the Dikembe Mutombo finger back-to-back, side-to-side. Being a fellow African, Dikembe Mutombo gave Bismack Biyombo the approval to use his infamous finger wag. But he probably played his way into a $20 million contract. Somebody's going to give it to him. Somebody who's going to target maybe Dwight Howard, who wants 30, who wants a max deal, who shouldn't get it because he's not LeBron James, because he's not Kevin Durant, but Dwight Howard thinks he is, and he thinks he's in that stratosphere. And his agent will certainly present him as being in that stratosphere to the GMs that are looking at him. But Dwight Howard is going to command that kind of money, and somebody is going to think about giving it to him. And when they do, the teams that are targeting him that don't give him that max deal, they're going to say, all right, we don't want it. Well, now we don't have to pay 30 to get Dwight here. Let's get somebody who's Dwight-esque for 10 less, 20, and they'll be happy to do it because Bismack Biyombo will be a bargain at that price. So that's the only problem that I have is when the superstars who generate the money for their franchises and for the league, when they cash in the way that they do, you can't really complain. You know, LeBron James, his impact on the local economy in Cleveland, Ohio, let alone on the NBA economy in terms of ratings and client expansion, if you will, pulling more and more clients in, spending more and more money with the networks, which of course grows that TV contract that the league signs. When LeBron James does what he does, or when Steph Curry does, who's going to get paid when he becomes a free agent, when Kevin Durant does, these guys are earning so much more for the league than they're even collecting for themselves. So I don't have a problem with it, but it's the domino effect to the guys who don't deserve anything even close to that. That really, really bothers me.
No, and I can.
I just want guys to make money based on their accomplishments, not based upon the accomplishments of better players than them, whose salaries go up as a result, thus bringing the bar with them for those who don't earn those. Go ahead.
And essentially, you know, it's because of the WAC stat, if you will, in this case, that some of these guys that are going to get these massive deals happen to be free agents now. They wouldn't be getting this kind of money if it was last offseason or the offseason before, because this is, of course, the year that the cap shoots up way, way high. And that's why you're going to see some of these deals. In a twisted way, Bob, I'm looking over some of the Cavs players that they have signed for next year. You know, your Tristan Thompsons and Shumperts and what have you. And suddenly the amounts of money on an annual basis, say Tristan Thompson, for example, at 15.3. Yeah, you're right. Somebody's probably going to offer a guy like Biyombo more than that. And it actually kind of makes me okay that they signed some of these guys before, because otherwise the Tristan Thompsons would be looking at $20 million instead
of
$15 million.
Right. You're right, and that's very true. And obviously, you know, they knew that too, talking about, yeah, you know, Thompson and Kevin Love. They knew that the competition for those bigger dollars was going to be out there when the cap expanded this year. And so, you know, Kevin Love, for example, wisely signed his long-term extension as a max player under the old max number. Before
he is 21.1 next season, incidentally.
There you go. So, you know, it's going to be what, 7, 8, 9 million, roughly less than what a max player could get.
Exactly.
In this coming, you know, with a new contract. But he was okay with that. And I was okay with the Cavaliers giving it to him. I'm okay with them giving it to Tristan Thompson, not the max, but the number that he did get. But it's just getting too high. I mean, it really, really is. We don't usually have these conversations anymore. Back in the early 1980s, we did, when we saw the first baseball player with a $3 million annual contract, three. Let me say that again, three. We freaked out. When Ricky Henderson got his first big contract, it was the biggest on all the sports at the time. Those kind of guys. It was crazy. Like, oh, my God, nobody deserves that kind of money. Doctors and surgeons and the president of the United States makes 1/50th of that. And on they have way more important jobs. We're over that. We're over that. They make too much stuff. Because guess what? You know how much they make? They make as much as the employer says they make. And if the employer says that they're worth that to them, in terms of how much money they can revenue they can generate based on their performances, then they're worth that kind of money. I'm not going to complain about how much money a guy is making anymore, but I am going to complain if they're not earning it, if they're just coattailing their way up the ladder. If the contracts are renegotiated and the guys at the top of the heap make more money now. It doesn't mean that somebody who is a second tier or third tier or fourth tier NBA player slash star should automatically go up commensurately with that increase for the top guys.
And of course,
you're still worth what you were worth before. You're not worth not more now just because Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, because those guys are worth more now. Go ahead.
And the other factor, obviously, you know, in this, which is part and parcel with the whole jumping up in one season, the cap by as much as it was, I think it was, what, 70-something, low 70s this past year, I think 74 or something like that this past season,
yeah.
And it's jumping up $20 million. That usually doesn't happen, obviously. So it's also going to force teams in certain positions that they're going to have to spend exorbitant amounts of money just to make the various floors or come near the cap. Perfect example. You were mentioning Biombo, a Toronto Raptor, though he's unrestricted now. Toronto had a payroll last year under the cap itself at 71. So, and that's kind of going to be, it's my understanding that numbers like that are going to kind of be the floor. And teams like Philly, the former process, only spent $64 million. So these guys are going to have to spend ridiculous amounts of money just to make the floor, not let alone the cap.
You're right. That's a great point.
And that's another factor. It's not just the players. Some teams are literally going to have to spend a whole bunch of money just so they hit the new salary floor,
that's
which
exactly
is also
right.
going up by $20 million.
And that's tough, too, by the way. That's another part about this. You know, they have to spend the money that they have available under the cap, particularly when you talk about just getting to the floor. Some of these guys who aren't necessarily at the floor problem, but, you know, they've got a bunch of money under the cap that they have to spend.
Yes.
When they do, they're going to be spending it on guys that don't deserve it, which is bad enough, but then it's going to really hamstring them when it comes to, let's say, next year's free agency class has much better players available,
yes.
But now suddenly we don't have the cap space because we had to give it to satisfy rules and our fan base that we were trying our best. We had to spend more money last year that lock us out of bidding for guys that are good enough, that are better, perhaps, than the ones we just signed to help us, you know, pursue a championship in the next several years. And that's the problem if you're forced to spend those dollars right now.
Incidentally, some of the teams I'm looking up, these are this past season's numbers, but essentially think of these as the teams that have to come up over the new floor. You're talking Portland playoff team, Orlando, Utah, Philly, Phoenix, and Sacramento were also at $70 million. And then you have Toronto, Indiana, Atlanta, all playoff teams at $71. These are the types of teams that are going to have to spend just to get between the floor and the cap.
Wow. You know, and there's a lot of money available out there and a lot of teams that have money to spend, and teams and players, I should say, that just don't deserve those dollars are going to get them, and they're going to set records, et cetera. And it's just going to be wrong.
And honestly, from the perspective of the Cavs, Bob, I kind of like that even with the cap jumping up like this, they're still going to be in luxury tax hell. And as a result, they're not going to be in the market for any of these big guys. That most you're looking at, you know, mid-level exception and vet minimums for Cavs players that they would get on the open market. So I suppose that's one good thing, especially from a Cavs perspective. They're so far still over the luxury tax, even when you factor in the new numbers, that they can't spend any money on these types of guys.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They can't, obviously, unless they dump salary someplace else and make some decisions.
Which is part of where the Kevin Love trade rumors still are coming from.
Exactly right. That's exactly what it is. And whether they wanted to do that or not, I mean, we kind of know they don't. I mean, you know, David Griffin said just a couple of days ago they have no intention of blowing this up. They have every intention of keeping the nucleus together to see what they can do. And I just take that as code for to see exactly if we can win another title as constructed. We don't feel the need to blow this up or lose.
That's how I read that, too.
Lose one of our cogs or our core pieces, whatever you want to call it, members of the nucleus, to try to rebuild it for next year. Let's just ride it and see what we still have. What was that last thing you said, Jim?
And that's how I'm reading what David Griffin was saying about that earlier. You're going to see some change on the periphery, a lot of talk in the last 48 hours of, and we knew this for a long time, Mozgov probably gone, and Delly possibly gone, because I could see he's still restricted, but I could see somebody thinking, hey, I could use that guy for my backup point guard. Let's give him $8 million, and the Cavs might have to be like, well, I don't know about that. So you're going to see some of those types of moves on the periphery, but that's about it.
Yeah, exactly right. The you know, the big names are going to stay the same, because I think Griffin realizes, you know, other teams have to load up to come at them now. It's not like they have to change things to
especially
go out and
in the
test
Eastern
somebody.
Conference.
Yeah, they're the lead dog in the pack now. Somebody else has to chase them. They don't have to chase anybody anymore. They just have to continue, make sure they stay sharp, make sure they stay focused, make sure they fix any little tweaks to the roster that need to be made, obviously, and know that they're being chased. They're not the ones who have to close the gap with anybody anymore. Although that would change, by the way, in my opinion, if Durant does indeed go with either Golden State or San Antonio. To me, if Kevin Durant leaves Oklahoma City and goes to either Golden State or San Antonio, that team automatically becomes the favorite to win the NBA title. No disrespect to LeBron, Kyrie, Kevin Love, J.R. Smith, and the boys who just did what they did. But to me, a nucleus that included Curry, Thompson, Green, Durant is automatically the favorite. A nucleus that includes the names of Aldridge and Kawhi Leonard and Parker and Durant automatically becomes the favorite. No doubt in my mind. Now, if Kevin Durant stays in Oklahoma City, I think the Cavs could make a strong case that we're the favorite to repeat. I think if he goes to Boston, if he goes to New York, if he goes to Atlanta, I think there's a strong, there's no chance that anybody is the favorite except for the Cavs.
It just may make the East Finals a little bit more interesting.
Oh, indeed.
Which is why
he might want to do such a thing, because that way he's almost guaranteed a shot to get to the East Finals, and you don't run the risk of being upset in the first round or the conference semifinals the way you do in that gauntlet out West.
And if from a Cavs perspective, again, say he stays out West, whether it's Oklahoma City where he stays there or goes to a San Antonio or Oklahoma City, Golden State. From a Cavs perspective, it's okay, so there's still no real challenge in the East. We'll see you guys in June. That's a June 2017 problem.
That's it. That's exactly right. Exactly right. And oh, by the way, there is one other name that's interesting, and I don't know if this is just posturing on his part or not, but you heard Dwayne Wade as well say,
yes,
talks are going very, very slowly at this stage with Miami, and he is starting to explore other options. I cannot imagine in a million years that Pat Riley would let LeBron James walk away 2 years ago and then Dwayne Wade walk away now. He will give him whatever amount he wants. I don't know what negotiations have to happen there. I don't know if this is D. Wade says he's still a max player. The Heat might differ based on a lost step or two or what it is. But it is interesting that Wade, who just watched LeBron leave him and go win another title, is suddenly not close with the Heat and maybe thinking about leaving and going to find another way to get another title.
You know, that story...
It's a copycat kind of a thing in free agency sometimes.
And you know, that story right there, which I read earlier today too, Bob, is kind of interesting because it almost is starting to be, to make it an interesting referendum on Pat Riley himself. And what I mean by that is, you mentioned LeBron from a couple years ago come back to Cleveland. Now apparently they're might be some issues with Dwayne Wade, who's of course been there since the day they drafted him in that famed 03 draft. They claim that they're going to be one of the big guys out there for Durant, but I can promise you this right now, if Wade decides to go elsewhere, Durant's not going to Miami. And suddenly the lure of playing under Pat Riley doesn't seem as shiny as it did a few years ago.
Saying. Well, it's not just Riley, as you know. It's the whole package. It's the South Beach thing. It's, the no state taxes down there.
Thing.
All of that stuff still draws folks down there. But you're right. If Dwayne Wade were to go, there might be, some suspicion or at least some recognition by other players that maybe that's not, all of a sudden as hot of a ticket as it once was. Pat Riley or no Pat Riley. All right. Still a lot of other topics I want to get into in the next half hour, including how about Goose Gossage managing to find a way once again to remind these young whippersnapper punks what baseball is supposed to be like. He is getting together with a minor league team for what? Get this. For Baseball's Unwritten Rules Day. The Goose will appear, and he will explain to everybody what the real unwritten rules of baseball are, courtesy of the St. Paul Saints. I'll tell you that story and get your reaction to that. I'm very, very interested in that. Another unwritten rules baseball story, by the way, kind of took place a couple of nights ago with the Chicago Cubs' Chris Bryant having an otherworldly night, 5-for-5, 3 home runs and 2 doubles. No one else has ever done that in the history of the game. Are players allowed to take curtain calls in visiting stadiums, visiting ballparks? That one's getting a lot of talk as well, so we want to cover that this afternoon. Jason Day, World Golf number 1, another one. After we already heard Rory McIlroy saying he's not going to Rio because of the Zika virus and other unsanitary conditions, Jason Day, the world number 1, not going, and it's leading to some angst from the IOC. We'll get into that a little bit, too. And obviously, as I said, baseball talk this second hour coming your way. Matt Underwood, the voice of the Indians for Sports Time Ohio on Fox Sports Ohio. And then that'll be at 4:05. Anthony Fenech of the Tigers, who continue to pound on the Marlins for the second straight day. Hopefully Anthony will join us at 4:35 to get an update on Detroit. So we'll get into all of that as we continue the extravaganza. 866-240-1065, the number for you to join us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, that's who we are, that's what we are, that's where we are, and you are with us. 866-240-1065, so you can actually join us on the radio. If you don't want your voice on the radio, but you want to have your thoughts expressed on the radio, then you can tweet to us. Tweet to us at SportsRadio1065 on Twitter, and Facebook comment to us at 1065 The Ticket. You have two different handles there, SportsRadio1065 on Twitter, and 1065 The Ticket on Facebook. Congratulations to Shane Kramer of Blair, Ohio, who is the winner of the Polish Fest tickets. I got more tickets to give away in this program. As a matter of fact, we got Marathon Classic tickets to give away and also a sweet deal. Early week sweet deal for you. Splash Universe in Dundee. We'll do that in the 4 o'clock hour. All right. By the way, speaking of the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to have Matt Underwood coming your way, coming our way. He is the voice of the Indians on Sports Time Ohio. And if you watch the Indians on TV, you are watching the hottest team in baseball. This has got to be the most fun Matt has had calling games. And actually, I can't remember exactly when he took over as the TV voice of the Indians. I'm trying to remember if he was calling games in 1997 when they went to the World Series.
No, I don't think he was in 97. I don't think so then.
I think he was in, so I know for a fact he was in 2007. That's 9 years ago,
right,
when the Indians had that
three games to one lead
in the ALCS against Boston and were just one game away from the World Series and then didn't get there. But I'm going to have to ask him. That's one of the reasons we have guys like this on. We're going to have to ask him if this is the most fun he has had calling games for a team, you know, since he started doing this. Matt's
And you know what's interesting, Bob, especially with that kind of question, the only time period I could think that he might say would be more exciting was those 10 games they won in a row to end up with that wild card in 13, maybe
that,
the only one that could compare.
There you
go.
And that
happened,
of course,
when it did in September like that.
Bingo. That one is probably better for that reason, and it led to the wild card spot, obviously. But this one looks more dominant, you know? There's a 10-game streak like that, they were hot. This doesn't strike me as being heat, does it to you? It strikes me as being dominant. The pitching they're getting, Corey Kluber last night, 8 innings, 3 hits allowed, simply dominant. Carrasco, before that, dominant. Bauer, before that, dominant. Josh Tomlin, honest to God, Danny Salazar tonight, I expect him to go out there and dominate and make it a 4 straight sweeps, of 4 broom jobs in a row for 12 straight wins, which would be the most they have won. Well, we still don't know if there was ever a 12-game
I still have not been
before.
Able to find out if there's been a 12-game streak. But as I mentioned, we filed the record for the Indians as 13 in 1942 and 51.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to ask Matt that question about, because I'm sure he'll know if there ever was a 12-gamer in between the 11 they have now and then those franchise record 13 streak. 13
and also, real quick, you remember we kind of brought the same thing up yesterday, and we're kind of saying it again because we saw another game like that. In addition to the dominant pitching, you get some guys in the zone at the plate. And a little bit of luck. Think of the play where Lindor steals home. It was when they throw to second, try to get the guy. Guy drops the ball so he can trot home. I mean, that's the kind of extra luck you need for these streaks, too.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, if you think about it, the dominance that I talk about is being accented by the luck rather than a team that just gets hot and is playing well. That is aided by the same kind of good fortune. I don't like throwing that word in there because it diminishes too much of what they're doing on the mound. And it's just incredible, this stretch. It cannot go on. I mean, I'm just being real. As much as you want to say, if you're an Indians fan anyway, if you're a Tigers fan, you want it to end soon. You want it to end now because you've got some ground to make up, obviously, in the standings.
Not just the Tigers, the Royals are in second, and they're 6 games back already. So
that's right, because they lost last night.
Right, so it'll be hard for those other Central teams to root tonight because it's still Atlanta, but maybe tomorrow they start a 4-game series in Toronto, and they're defending division champions, still right in there in the playoff mix. That'll be a tougher nut.
Yeah, so just to clarify this, the Indians are 16 games over 500 now, 46-36 over Kansas City at 40-36, 7.5 over the Tigers. So just to kind of clarify that. And the Indians, let's see, they are back at Progressive Field for the 4th of July.
4th of July.
Starting on Monday.
Yep, and that's the last
week.
That's
the Tigers.
And that's also the last week before the All-Star break. They'll be at home that whole week against the Tigers and then Dem Yankees.
Now hold on a second. Hold on. My goodness gracious. We got so many elements to all of this. They've won 11 in a row. If they win tonight against the Atlanta Braves, it's 12 in a row. It's four straight series sweeps.
Right.
Then they've got Toronto tomorrow on this trip to what? That's tomorrow through Sunday.
That's a four gamer. Yes.
A four gamer tomorrow through Sunday. And then they got the Tigers. All right.
Back at home they get the Tigers.
Yeah, back at Progressive Field. All right, it's not likely. I was trying to see exactly what they had after the Braves tonight. I wasn't looking ahead to the Blue Jays. I forgot about them. And that's too good of a team. Not that they're a world beater, but it's too good of a team to try to expect another sweep. I was just wondering if they could get back against the Tigers again, still rolling in a streak that included three against the Tigers up at Comerica, of course, last weekend. That's probably asking a little bit too much, even with the best starting rotation in the American League. All right, so we'll get into all of that with Underwood coming up at 4:05. And I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be great fun, no question about it. But I want to talk about a couple of other things, as I said, in this segment before 4 o'clock. Jason Day, the world number one golfer, has said that the threat of the Zika virus is keeping him away from Rio. He will not play in the Olympics. He joins Rory McIlroy and Adam Scott is the biggest names in the sport to drop out of the Olympics. Concerns of the Zika virus, as well as security, because it's a very violent city, political upheaval, travel, and schedule have led to the withdrawals of a number of these golfers. Ireland's Shane Lowry, tied for second in the U.S. Open 2 weeks ago, also withdrew on Tuesday. So these are big names. But Jason Day said at Firestone Country Club, where the World Golf Championships and the Bridgestone Invitational begin on Thursday, tomorrow, he said, I can't put my family through that, especially with the future children we're looking at having. My wife wants four kids. And obviously, if we're having four kids, I need to make sure that the priority is family first. And you know what he means by that. He and his wife have two children already, Dash and Lucy, so he wants a couple more children. And we all know that the Zika virus that is prevalent in Africa, African countries, and in South American countries, where this, of course, is taking place, it is something that leads to serious birth defects if the parents. Now, I don't know all the science behind it yet. I don't know if it's, you know, the male or the female, the mom or the dad, contracting the Zika virus either at the time of conception or while the woman is pregnant. I don't know exactly how it goes as to what the threat is, but Jason Day just simply said, I can't take that risk. I understand and sympathize, he said, with everyone that has made the decision to withdraw their names. But I also understand what an honor it is to represent your country to try to win a gold medal. That's why it's hard for me to pull out. To be able to be one of Australia's first to represent golf in the Olympics would be an honor, but it's just so hard because of what's going on. Now, here's the thing. The IOC is complaining. As you know, golf is new to the Olympics. Kind of weird, one of the oldest games in the world, oldest sports in the world, but it is new to the Olympics. The IOC is saying if the golfers don't want to come and play, then maybe we ought to get rid of golf as one of the sports in the Olympics. Putting it on the players, saying if you're not willing to put your health and the health potentially of your family in jeopardy, then we don't want you here anyway. Now, I got to tell you, I don't think too many of the golfers would mind. Let me ask you a question. If Jason Day wins a gold medal for Australia, where do you think that'll rank on his list of career achievements? If he wins himself three Masters, a couple of U.S. Opens, a couple of PGAs, or whatever the case might be, they play for majors. They don't play for gold medals. If you were to ask, how many gold medals has Serena Williams won for Team USA in the Olympics in tennis? I got to say she's had a couple, right? Well, where does that rank? Does anybody know? Nobody knows because nobody cares, because what does matter is her 18 or 19 or 20. I don't even know what the number is of her Grand Slam titles. When you're a professional player in one of those sports, the Olympics is already borderline interesting to you. But when you are, I'm sorry, but yeah, but when you were being asked to go play in those Olympic Games in a city that should never have been greenlit to host the event because of the Zika virus, because of the water contamination, because of the crime, because of the political upheaval and all the rest, you don't blame the players, you don't blame the sport, you blame the city, you blame the IOC, the individuals who greenlit that particular games, and that's the end of it. You don't sit there and denigrate the way they are, Jason Day and Rory McIlroy and other golfers, for not wanting to put themselves or their families in jeopardy. So if you've got thoughts on that, excuse me, if you've got thoughts on that, by all means, let's hear from you at 866-240-1065. All right, I mentioned this story before the break that we just took, so I want to throw it back in there now because I just love it. You know, this is one of those strange stories that I'm of two minds on, okay? When Joey Bats, Jose Bautista, did that bat flip in the playoffs last year between the series between the Blue Jays and the Rangers, it was, of course, you know, the bat flip heard around the world, as they say, and most fans just thought it was awesome because it was just an expression of pure emotion, not an attempt to show anybody up. But the old get off my lawn guys said, man, that stuff has no place in the game. And nobody has been more get off my line than Goose Gossage, the former closer for the New York Yankees. The Goose called Joey Bats, Jose Bautista, and other, well, he listed a bunch of different kinds of players, but for some reason focused in on other Latin players, I think is what he actually said. Turning the game into a mockery with all of this showboating and stuff. There are unwritten rules, he said, that are supposed to be followed, and showing up pitchers is one of them. You don't show up a pitcher, and if you do, you're going to wear one next time around. Well, we know what that led to. It led to Bautista wearing one, not next time around, but last time around, when these two teams played for the final time this season, obviously about a month ago now, which led to the slide, which led to the Odor punch, and on we go. But the unwritten rules, well, they've stayed in the spotlight thanks to Goose Gossage, and now they're going to remain there because of the St. Paul Saints. Goose is getting together with the minor league St. Paul Saints to hold unwritten rules night at a Saints game. It's Wednesday, July 6th, so next Wednesday, when the Saints take on the Joplin Blasters. The first 1,500 fans in attendance are going to receive the first of its kind unwritten rule book. Coming in at more than 200 pages and 4.1 inches wide and 6.3 inches high, the 2016 official baseball rulebook explains everything from the layout of the field to equipment that can be used to how a game should be scored. The unwritten rulebook, however, will be similar in size with fewer pages, and by the end of the night, packed with information that addresses baseball situations that have been hotly debated for decades. If you're wondering about the superstition of discussing a no-hitter, it'll be in the book. What about stealing a base when you're up 10 runs? It can be in the book. What about bunting on a pitcher who's throwing a no-hitter? All you got to do is flip open the book, grab a pencil, and the answer can appear right before your eyes. That means because they're going to write them in as they go. So the baseball
That's the best part right there, by the way.
The baseball unwritten rule book is essentially going to be a bunch of what? Blank pages, because they're unwritten, and people are going to write them in as Goose, I guess, guides them. So you get a book of unwritten rules, essentially blank paper, and then it's up to you to fill in the pages with baseball's very own unwritten mandates that Mr. Gossage will apparently preside over. I just think it's hilarious. I can't get enough of it because I love what Gossage is trying to do, but I also think he was so far off base on Jose Bautista, and so is David Wells, by the way, who jumped in the round mound of pitching. David Wells acknowledging that if anybody would ever flip a bat on him the way Jose Bautista did, he would absolutely wear one the next time, and then time after that if that's what it took, because it's just not done in the game of baseball. That story is very, very cool, and it's leading to some other discussions of what else is not quite appropriate on the baseball field. One of them happened in Cincinnati a couple of nights ago, and if we get an opportunity, we'll cover that one too, coming up in the next hour of the extravaganza. All right, but for now, we'll take that time out. We got a sports center coming, and while we do that, as we head to the sports center, I remind you that Matt Underwood, the voice of the Indians on Sports Time Ohio, will join us right after the top of the hour, about 4:05 or so. But on the way into that, how about that sweet deal I told you about? I've got a sweet deal family four-pack of tickets to Splash Universe in Dundee. All I got to do is log on to 1065theticket.com tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. to get a $130 gift certificate to Splash Universe for just $35. But I will give you a free one right now. That's right, a free $130 gift certificate to Splash Universe to the 10th caller at 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. We'll talk a little more baseball with the voice of the Indians, Matt Underwood, the hottest team in baseball, remaining the hottest topic in baseball, and we bring you the hottest topics here on Toledo's Sports Leader, ESPN 1065.
Rajay Davis makes the catch on the warning track.
Dropped it?
Or did he?
I think he dropped it.
I got an out call with Fielman Colbert. He's calling him out. This is going to be a double play, and the game is over.
He caught that ball.
How do you like me now?
Frenchie Fuqua's book with some fancy footwear. Oh, and he just hammers one at deep left field and puts the Indians right back on top, 3-2. The man with the gold shoes goes deep for the Indians, his seventh home run of the year, and it's a 3-2 Indians advantage. And Tyler Naquin, he booms one to deep right. Avilas is out of room, it's out of here. Back-to-back jacks in the fifth for Cleveland. Number
like
Napoli
that.
Drives it to deep left. Long gone. Home run number 16 for Nap.
What is it with in this series? Watch who's ahead of you. Oh,
Lottie,
no.
Lift off, deep right. Avila's back. And it is gone. A home run. Another home run. The fourth of the inning for Cleveland. Another two-run shot, a six-run fifth, and I mean to tell you, Verlander is stunned. Team games over 500.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, that's, you know, it's funny, I asked Jim Cush, and I said, hey, pull a couple of highlights from the voice of Matt Underwood from Sports Time Ohio to bring Matt into the program for hour number two as we begin now at 4:10 on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. And how about that? Virtually everything he just pulled. Jim, did I miss one? Weren't they all home runs or offensive play? Oh, no, you did have the catch by Davis.
I had the catch from the Friday night win in Detroit because that was just such a fun play.
No doubt about it. It was, and it was a big part of this. And as we've talked about, you have to be good, but you also have to have a little bit of luck or have some good fortune go your way, including a bobbling catch like that in order to have a winning streak like this. But it's interesting. Almost everything that we just pulled or that Jim just threw together for you there had to do with the bats, except for that. Nothing having to do with what is carrying this team even further, perhaps, than anybody thought it would, and that is the best pitching staff in the American League, which just continues to do ridiculous things to the opponents. And joining us now to talk about the ridiculous fun that Indians fans are having right now is the voice of the Indians on Sports Time Ohio, Fox Sports Ohio, Matt Underwood. Matt, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm good, Bob. How are you?
I am outstanding. So good to talk to you again, Matt. It's been a long time since we've been able to chat, talk a little baseball. And let me start right there, if I could. You know, and it is interesting because I was talking to Zach Meisel a couple of days ago, of course, covers the Tribe out there. We were talking about there's got to be a point in time where we stop saying that the other shoe is going to drop and that, you know, these Indians are playing offensively above their weight. They're hitting above their weight class and so on. You know, the arms are that good, but my goodness, Matt, this isn't luck when you start pounding the baseball the way they are, and they've scored six or more runs how many times in, I think, seven out of the 11-game winning streak?
Well, they had a seven-game streak there where they scored six or more, which hadn't been done since 2005. That came to an end last night, but they found a way to win. You know, last night was a kind of an example on good teams find a way to win games like that. And when you're not necessarily a bad team, but you're still trying to figure out how to become a good team, that's a game that you might have let slip away. But they got it done. And the reason they got it done is because the starting pitching continues to be so good that it gives you a chance to win every night. And you know, look, offense comes and goes. You're not going to score six runs every game. You're not going to hit with runners in scoring position every night. You're not going to hit, you know, home runs and doubles, which, you know, last night they won without an extra base hit. And during the 11-game win streak, they've clobbered 46 extra base hits. 21 of those have been homers, 18 doubles, 7 triples. But when the offense has an off night, if the pitching staff is there to pick them up, you just scratch it out and you figure out a way to get it done. So that's what gives you hope that this is not flukish, that this is not just a run that they're on, that this is sustainable, because 1 through 5, every one of those starting pitchers is really firing on all cylinders right now.
There's no question about that, and that was expected. Well, maybe not to the level they are right now. This run is incredible, as you point out, but the pitching was supposed to carry them. The offense was, well, can they get enough put together on a night-to-night basis to win the majority of these games? And they're clubbing teams, like you said, into submission for the most part, with the exception of last night. But what you just said was key, Matt. We talked about this a little bit on our program yesterday. And that is the fact that that winning streak, which going into yesterday we were talking about as a 10-gamer, is a little bit different than being hot. And Jim Cushlin, our producer, who you spoke with as we brought you onto the air, pointed this out. That 10-game winning streak to finish the 2013 season might have been more exciting because, of course, it happened to finish the season and to squeak the Indians into the playoffs, into the wild card game. That was an example, in my view, of a team that got hot, really hot at the right time, and it carried them into that, you know, into the playoffs, into that wild card game. I see this 10, now 11 game winning streak as more than just a hot team. This is a very, very good team. It is a very, very dominant team on the mound that, as you say, is getting the production and finding ways to win, even if they aren't getting a lot of, you know, a lot of run support.
Well, I remember a couple of weeks ago we were in Kansas City, and the team had started the month of June really well. I think they won, I want to say maybe one first six games to start the month of June. Went into Kansas City for a weekend series to end that road trip, which they had played well going into that series on that road trip.
Right.
But they got swept. And before the series, or maybe in the middle of the series, I remember Terry Francona saying, you know, the team's playing well. We've gotten to this point to where they were, I want to say, five, maybe six games over 500 at that point. And he said, but we can't look at this as a high watermark. We've got to look at this as a jumping off point. And it was a subtle message that he sent to his team, but the message was received because these guys didn't look at it and say, oh, well, you know, this is pretty good. Look at how good we are now. They got their butts kicked in Kansas City and came home, and instead of hanging their heads or coming home with their tail between their legs, they went out and swept the homestand, and they've kept the momentum going on this road trip. So Terry has a way of getting the message through to his players on what he expects from them. And they're running with it right now. And because they're pitching so well, it gives you that opportunity night in and night out. But this is a more dynamic team, offensively than we've seen in a while because of the speed factor. You know, with Rajay Davis at 35, those young legs are still firing, man. I mean, he's a threat every time he's on base. Jose Ramirez runs very well. Lindor can steal your bag. Kipnis can run well. Tyler Naquin's got speed. So now, and I'm not just talking about stolen base speed, but the ability to go first to home on a ball hitting the gap. It puts pressure on the defense. So that gives them one more way to beat you than just sitting back and waiting for somebody to hit one out of the ballpark.
That's a great point. We are talking with Matt Underwood, the voice of the Cleveland Indians, of course, longtime voice, along with Rick Manning on Sports Time Ohio. Matt, how many years have you been calling games for the Tribe?
Well, let me think here. I started in 2000 on the radio, so I did 7 seasons on radio. And I started with Rick in 07, so this is our 10th year together on TV, which doesn't seem that long, but, you know, our first year together on TV was one of the best years we've seen in a long time. They were one win away from going to the World Series that year. And that was a good team that had good pitching, but even the pitching on that club wasn't as good as what we're seeing this year.
Well, that was exactly the reason I asked. I was trying to remember if you, and of course I knew you did the radio, but I couldn't exactly remember when you took over as the lead voice on the telecast, and I wanted to know if it was in 07. I asked Jim earlier on, we were going to look it up, and I said, I'll just ask him. Because I wanted to know how this compares to in your time as the voice, you know, of the Tribe on television, you know, as far as the most fun you've had, watching this streak continue to grow, watching them treat it the way they treat it. And then I thought, well, if he was called in the games in 07, that means he called, you know, the 3-1 lead that they ended up blowing against the Red Sox. And as exciting as that season was and as heartbreaking as it was at the end, when you look back on it, that's probably got to be your high point as far as excitement calling games.
Yeah, and, you know, remember, too, back in 01, that was a really good Indians team under Charlie Manuel. When I was doing radio, that was a fun team. Juan Gonzalez, Robbie Alomar, Jim Thome. That team could generate a lot of offense. But unfortunately, they got in the playoffs against a great Seattle team that year that shut them down in the ultimate game in the best of five that year out in Seattle. But, you know, that 07 team was a lot of fun to watch, but... Again, when I think back on that 2017, you know, Victor Martinez was obviously a huge element in that ball club, but that team had very good pitching. But this team's just different, and I think this team has more ways to beat you. It's better pitching top to bottom than that 2007 club, and that 2007 club had good pitching, but people forget Cliff Lee really wasn't a part of that 2007 team.
That's right.
Had he been, we probably have a World Series championship trophy sitting at Progressive Field, but he got hurt early in the year and never really got on track. Wasn't even on the postseason roster that year and won the Cy Young the following season. So that's how close they were in 07. But this team seems to have all of the pieces from a starting pitching standpoint, got a good back end of the bullpen. I think, you know, they're in the market probably looking for another arm to add to that bullpen. And I think ideally in a perfect world, if the pieces fall together, they'd probably like to add another impact bat that can play the outfield, because right now no one really is certain whether or not we'll see Michael Brantley back this year. There's hope, but we haven't seen him yet other than a few games early in the season, so you just don't know. And even if he does come back, it's hard to drop a guy into the middle of the season and expect him to be the same Michael Brantley that we've seen in the past. So there's just there are a lot of question marks that they've got to sort through before the trading deadline.
Yeah, no question about it, Matt. We're talking to Matt Underwood again, the voice of the Tribe. You hear him and see him, of course, with Rick Manning on the Sports Time Ohio telecast of all Indians games. So Matt, it was interesting you're comparing the pitching staffs to some extent. Of course, we know CC won the Cy Young that year. We know that Fausto Carmona finished fourth in the balloting, and they were up next in games five and six with that 3-1 lead over the Red Sox. And you said a moment or two ago, this is a better pitching staff. Is there a comparison you can make? Forget about that 07 Indians team, but when you look at this fivesome, and it's interesting because this fivesome didn't break camp as the fivesome in the rotation. I thought it should have. I said back then, I understand the, you know, wanting to try to get Cody Anderson back there, but based on their springs, Trevor Bauer should have been in the rotation from the get-go. But being what it is now with Kluber, Salazar, Carrasco, Bauer, and Tomlin, is there a comparison of the strength of 1 through 5 in a rotation that you can think of in recent years, Indians or
you know, from an Indian standpoint, the only other the staff that I can look back on that would compare would be the 05 team, because I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think that was a team that only used 5 starters. I don't even know if they had another starting pitcher other than the 5 guys that they started the year with. You know, that was CC, obviously, Kevin Millwood, Scott Ellerton was part of that rotation. And I don't remember exactly, but I think it might have been Jake Westbrook. And I'm not remembering exactly who the 5th starter was. But that was a really good starting rotation. Kevin Millwood won the ERA title that year.
Yep.
They kept him in it right to the final game of the season because that was an offense that hadn't quite reached its maturity. You know, if it was a Cabernet Sauvignon, it still needed a few more years in the barrel. But that was a good one. And I think this is probably the best I've seen 1 through 5. I'm talking top to bottom of as a rotation. This is the best I've seen since then. And before that, you know, everyone overlooks the fact that the 95 Indians, while they didn't have a pure ace, that was a very good starting five that led the league in ERA in 1995. We focus on the offense because that's what was in vogue back then. But that was a pretty good pitching staff. Outside of that, I'm sure you've got to go back to probably the mid-50s. Maybe some of those staffs in the 60s but you know, you're talking 4-man rotations at some point.
Sure.
In the 50s. So this is a pretty good rotation right now, and they've got a chance. Look, we're only halfway through the season, not quite there, but they've got a chance to be a very special group.
That 2005 team, I just, while you chatted, I described it. I went ahead and looked it up. Cliff Lee was 18-5 that year. CC was 15-10. Jake was 15-15. How about that? 30 decisions.
Yeah.
Then you had Ellerton was 11-9, and Kevin Millwood, as you pointed out, was only 9-11, but an ERA of 2.86 to win that title. So that was the 05.
And that was astounding because they didn't need any other starters. You know, even right. this year we had lost Carrasco for a little while. You had the big guy, Cody Anderson, came up, made a few starts. It's very rare to have five guys go wire to wire during a regular season.
No question about it. And you mentioned Victor Martinez on that 07 team and what a big role he played, which just reminds me, of course, of his Tigers now. Is there an explanation for it, Matt, the dominance against a team that from 2013 to 2016, and I saw this stat going into the weekend series, you probably mentioned it on the air, the Indians were 19-37 against the Tigers in the three previous seasons, which is just amazing. To be 9-0 against them now, I don't think neither Terry Francona nor Brad Ausmus would say that the Indians are nine games better than the Tigers, maybe with the exception of the pitching staff we just described. But is there a way to explain that dominance of one team like this over another?
I don't think so. Not really. You know, so often in baseball, it's a matter of when you play a team. And I don't think that that's necessarily the answer either. I just think the Indians have played really well. Look, they made it a point to a man and as a staff that they had to play better in the division, which they've done a fantastic job of. Coming into today's game, they are, 24-10 within the Central Division, which is phenomenal. And that's what you have to do. You've got to win in the division to win the division. So I just think they treat those divisional games. They maybe get a little more up for some of those division games. And look, the Tigers have kicked some dirt in their face the last few years. And I think they want to make sure they show up and play well against them. But could I explain 9-0? That's crazy. I mean, three years ago it was the White Sox. They went 17-2.
Right.
And the very next year the White Sox turned the tables on them. So within the division, I don't know how a team gets that hot against a team that you play all the time because they know all your secrets. There's nothing to the imagination when it comes to playing against your divisional foes, but they've had their number to this point. But as Terry Francona said, you know, it's not a team that you go in thinking, well, we've got these guys, because with that lineup, you saw what they did today in the first inning. They ran up four runs, had the bases loaded. They could have had 8-9 runs today in the first inning against the Marlins, but that's a team that definitely you always have to be on guard when you play them.
No question about it. And you know, they're dangerous, and they're 7.5 back. Obviously, the Royals are 6 back now as the Indians continue to ride this wave. But we know that the wave will end, as it always does, and there will probably be some valleys, you know, to counter the peak that they're,
right.
they've reached right now. I've asked everybody that I've talked to about baseball in the last month or so if any team is equipped to pull away between the Indians, Royals, Tigers, and White Sox, or is this going to be nip and tuck pretty much all summer and into September? And almost everybody says, yeah, it will be, but if any one team is better equipped to do it and to put some separation between one and two in the division, it is probably the Indians. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think another way to look at it, Bob, another way to ask the question is, which of the teams chasing the Indians has the best opportunity to catch them? And I think if you look at those other teams, Chicago, Kansas City, Detroit, nobody has the starting pitching, I don't think, to consistently play well enough to catch him. That's why I think it's the Indians' division to lose the way they're playing right now. If they continue to pitch well, nobody can match those five guys for Cleveland. And what that does is it keeps you away from long losing streaks, which that's right now. When you're sitting 16 games over 500, that you just have to avoid, as you said, those valleys. They're going to come. You know, you're not going to score at, you know, 6-run-a-game clip for the entire season. But if you continue to pitch well, it's going to make it tough for any of those teams to really make a run and catch the Indians. But, look, as we also know, it is a long haul, and you never know what's around the corner. You know, a sore arm, an injury pops up, and that changes the dynamic in a hurry. So if they can keep everybody healthy, which is obviously first and foremost, they've got a great opportunity to win this thing.
Couple more quickies, and we'll get you out of here, Matt, so you can get ready for tonight's 7:10 start down in Atlanta, looking for a fourth straight broom job, which is just incredible. Not that it's, you know, the Braves are the Braves, but, you know, it's funny, going into this thing, I said, this is the kind of thing where the streak ends. You go down there and you ought to pound one of the, I think, the second worst team in baseball record-wise behind the Twins, and that's when you lose two out of three down here, and you're reminded that, yeah, this is baseball. But, you know, they're taking care of business. So Matt Underwood is our guest, the voice of the Indians on Sports Time Ohio. Watch him and Rick Manning every game. So Rick, a couple of things about the Indians' offense. You know, you mentioned Davis and what he's done, and you mentioned Ramirez, but we got to just talk about Frankie Lindor for a second. I know he's not going to win the MVP in the American League. I'm not delusional, but he is becoming one of the best all-around players in the American League. Offensively, as a run producer, batting average, power, run production, obviously glove, he is just so far beyond what anybody expected he could be or would be in his second season, despite having such a tremendous rookie season. Well, what can you say about where he's headed, I guess, Matt?
Well, look, he just recently passed the 162 game mark. So we, as you said, we don't want to get too carried away. But with what we've seen him do up to this point and what you could project to see him do in the future, he has a chance to be one of the all-time greats in terms of this franchise's history. But there are, you know, again, you never know what's around the corner in this game. But from what we've seen, what I take away is, and I've had an opportunity, it's been my pleasure to watch some great players. I got a chance to watch Robbie Alomar here for the Indians. I watched Omar Vizquel for years. The great players make the game look rather simple. They make it look pretty easy. And that's the thing from watching Lindor that he's able to do. The game doesn't look difficult. It doesn't speed up on him. There was a ball last night. It was a ground ball, hard hit up the middle. He made the play. And he exerted a little more than regular effort to make it, but he made it look awfully easy. And I know, thinking back, there's a 4, 5, or 6 shortstops that have played for this team in the past that wouldn't have even gotten to the ball, let alone gotten to it, spun around from the outfield grass and still thrown them out. That's the thing that strikes you when you watch Lindor. He's able to slow the game down, and he does it on both sides of the ball. I mean, not only is he fantastic defensively, but you need a single, boom, there's a base hit. You need a double, here's a gap shot. Oh, we need a home run. He can turn on one and hit it for some power. So he seems to be able to do it all, and he does it with a great air about him. He's very confident, but he's very humble. He's very courteous, and he's got that million-dollar smile that I love. He has fun playing the game, and I hope fans appreciate watching him because he's a real treat.
Matt, he's got to be in the All-Star team. Voting-wise, he has nowhere near the votes that I think, again, speaking about our mutual friend with Zach Meisel, he posted or tweeted the stats for the top five guys in the votes right now, their slash lines, and then their war. And Frankie Lindor's was better than everybody's in virtually every category of the slash line and war, with the exception of Bogarts, who is going to be the starter. He's got to make that, and I asked the question, who else? Well, first of all, do you think he will? I can't imagine how Ned Yost leaves him off. But how many of these Indians do you think Ned Yost will, because I don't think anybody's in line to start, will he add from the Indians?
Well, I think there's no question he deserves to be on the team. I don't know, when it comes to the composition of the roster, how they work it. You know, obviously Xander Bogarts, Carlos Correa, but I think Lindor. I think if you take all three of them, not only are they the three best shortstops, they might be three of the best players in the league.
No question.
Top to bottom. So I think he's got to be on the All-Star team. And outside of him, I would
Frankie's
like to see...
Frankie's numbers, by the way, Matt, I'm sorry, but are far better than Correa's at this point. In virtually everything. So there's, you know, I mean, again, in war, he's the only guy three-plus besides Bogarts. Everybody else is either plus one or, in one case, I can't remember who it was in the top five, who was actually in the negative. So, if there is only two, to me... It's got to be Bogarts and Lindor, not Bogarts and Correa and then Lindor. But you're right, they may end up taking all three. Who else deserves it from this Indians club?
I think at least one of the starters has got to go on, and I would think maybe two. And again, I don't know how they work it. I don't know how they compose the roster. But I think, look, Josh Tomlin's 9-1. I mean, are you kidding me? He's got a chance to be in double figures in wins before the All-Star game. And I just, look, I'm a personal fan of his because I know what he's gone through. Coming back from Tommy John, coming back from shoulder surgery, sort of being the forgotten guy, even though I tried to tell anyone who would listen this spring, don't forget about Josh Tomlin. He's going to be a terrific addition to the rotation this year because he's finally healthy and he's pitched marvelously. And but I think Danny Salazar so far this year has put himself in line to be on that All-Star team. I know he was right up there at the top. He was either first or second in ERA there for a while. Struggled a little bit his last time out with his command, but I expect him to come out here tonight and be more like the Danny Salazar we've seen throughout this season, which is an easy 98 exploding out of his hand and a goofy changeup that just baffles hitters. So I think both of those guys from the rotation deserves a chance. If they only have to take one, I hope it's one or the other at least.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly how the percentage goes, but the reserves are, of course, chosen by the managers and by with a combination of the player ballot choices. So the players have their own ballots, I guess, and the managers.
Right.
And I don't know which weighs more or how they figure that out. But I would certainly hope that Ned Yost, who has watched this guy, you know, the team in his division, that's leading his division, leading his team by six games, that he will indeed recognize the worthy performances of at least two of the starters. I would agree with you, and certainly Francisco Lindor, if nobody else, from that everyday lineup. Matt, it's just been so much fun talking baseball with you. It's even more fun listening to you call games and watching the games because this is a very, very fun summer, and I don't know exactly what's going to happen between now and the trading deadline, but it could get even much better because this team doesn't look hot. They look good. They look like a team where an 11-game winning streak isn't just everybody caught fire at the same time. It's just that everybody is playing the way they play this game.
Well, and not only do we have the chance to sweep Atlanta here tonight, but then we go to Toronto for, I think, what has a chance to be a really exciting four-game series over the weekend. And just for your listeners who are watching on a nightly basis, remember, it's kind of a weird series. Thursday's a night game, but then Friday is a Canada day. So it's a 1 o'clock game on Friday, 1 o'clock game on Saturday, 1 o'clock game on Sunday. So looking forward to a great weekend north of the border before we finally get back home on the 4th of July to take on the Tigers.
Looking forward to it. Matt, thanks for the reminder, by the way, of those start times, because our fans certainly do, our listeners and Indians fans certainly do need to know that. And, yeah, I can't wait to see what happens the next time they get together with the Tigers. I said there's no way after they swept them twice in a row and hit six straight. Going into, I was talking to Meisel and a Detroit beat writer, because, you know, where we are in Toledo, we get a lot of Tigers fans here, of course.
Sure.
And I said there's no way either team is sweeping the other one. There's only going to be one game of movement in the standings here. The Indians go up a game by winning two out of three, or it's closed by a game with the tie. And sure enough, there we sit. So I'm not even going to bother predicting that there won't be a sweep the next time around, because the way they seem to be matched up against the Tigers, for whatever reason, whether it's at the dish or the starters or the relievers, they just seem to be a bad matchup for the Tigers against the Indians right now this season. And that's going to be an awful lot of fun when they get back to Progressive Field. So we'll leave it at that, Matt. Really great stuff. Great analysis as always. We really enjoy watching and listening to you call the games. And thanks for the time this afternoon.
You got it, Bob. Thanks. Have a great day. We'll talk to you soon.
You do the same. Thank you, Matt.
Bye-bye.
There's Matt Underwood, the voice of the Tribe on Sports Time Ohio. That Tigers series at Progressive Field starting on Monday, the 4th of July, honestly, is going to be something fun to watch. Brad Ausmus had a closed-door meeting with his club after the last sweep, and obviously, or maybe it was before the third game of the sweep. But at any rate, obviously, not a whole lot of difference there. They're angry. And they Ausmus told the Tigers to go into that last series at Comerica this past weekend a little bit ticked off, and they were. I read some of the coverage. We talked to Anthony Fenech, whom we will talk to again here in a couple of minutes, and they were ticked off about the way they had been manhandled by the Indians in the first six, and then they got manhandled for three more. It'll be really interesting to see what kind of anger they play with or what their mental approach is when they go to Progressive Field to take on the Indians starting on Monday. All right, let's get a timeout now. Let's give away something else fun, first of all, because we're giving away all kinds of great stuff today. I told you I had more Marathon Classic tickets for you if you would like to go to the Big Golf event at Highland Meadows starting on July 11th and running through the 17th. I've got a four-pack of tickets, and I'll give them to you if you're the 10th caller at 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. Good luck to you. And then on the other side, we'll come back and talk Tigers baseball with Anthony Fenech of the Detroit Free Press right here on ESPN 106.5.
Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, the ticket.
Yeah, you know, I kind of was afraid of that it might happen, that Anthony Fenech, who is supposed to talk Tigers with us, might run right up against the end of the game. It's interesting because when Jim Cushion talked to Anthony before the show started, as we prepared our show, He said, hey, do you want to go today or do you want to talk with us tomorrow? Anthony is kind enough to join us every week from the Free Press talking about the Tigers that he covers, of course, on the beat. And he said, you know, the way this game is moving so slowly, this is before 3 o'clock. Yeah, I said, we can probably do it today about 4:30. And I said, okay, if you can do it today, great. Sure enough, though, here it is. It's 4:45, and the game has gone final, and he is not able to join us because he is doing his job. He's in the clubhouse talking to Tigers about their win over the Marlins. So there you go. I thought we'd be able to talk some baseball with Mr. Anthony Fenech, but not so much. So there you got. The good news, by the way, of course, for Tigers fans is 10-3 is the final. They went 2 straight, obviously, over Miami to take care of to bounce back from the 3-game sweep they had they suffered at the hands of the Indians over the weekend. So it was Norris today going 5 innings, giving up 8 hits, only 2 runs, though. So that's the most important thing. He left a lot of guys on base. Struck out 8, walked, struck out 8 is what I'm trying to say, laboring to say. Walked only 1, and the bats were a-booming. Miguel Cabrera goes 3-for-4. He drove in 3. Hit a bomb in the 4th inning, his 18th of the season. Moya also hit one out today. That was a solo shot. And then Saltamalacchia hit his 8th home run of the season in the 5th inning, also a solo shot. So big bats. Kinsler had 2 hits. Maben had a pair as well. Cabrera 3-for-4 with the 3 driven in, as I mentioned. Victor had a pair with a couple driven in. Upton was 1-for-5, drove 1 in. Moya, I mentioned the solo shot. Saltamalacchia catching today was 3-for-5 with 2 driven in for Detroit. So pounding on the Marlins and winning 2 straight and kind of trying to keep pace. And it's really all they can do, at least in terms of the division right now, as you look at the standings. All the Tigers can do is try to kind of, you know, keep their head above water and keep pace until you get another shot on the same field as the Indians. That's when you can really start to close division gaps down, even though we're not even at the All-Star break yet. You're still looking at these things. I got to say, and I'm interested, by the way, congratulations to Ron. Ron Worzyniak was our winner of the Marathon Classic tickets during our last break. I got to say, I was a little surprised when I talked to Matt Underwood a couple of minutes ago about the American League Central race. And, you know, we talk about whether or not it's going to be a nip-and-tuck battle for pretty much most of the summer with the 4 teams kind of all lumped together a little bit. The lumpiness is kind of gone. You know, literally a week or a week and a half ago, everybody was in like 3.5 games of one another. And now the Indians are 8.5 up instead of 3.5 up on the White Sox, 7 over the Tigers, 6 over the Royals. So there's not that, you know, that lumped together thing isn't happening anymore. But I kind of still expect it to. And I asked Matt Underwood, I said, you know, do you expect this to kind of tighten up again where it's going to be real four teams really going at it in a close battle for the division championship for most of the summer to come? And Matt said, well, that could happen, yeah. But as he pointed out, it's not really can the Indians keep pulling away. It's, is there a good enough pitching staff on any one of the other 3 rosters, the Royals, the Tigers, or the White Sox, to catch them? You know, as if this 6-game lead that they have right now is something that's, you know, could stick. You know, I could expect a 6-game lead to hold maybe going into September. I might even, depending upon the rotation that I have, might be able to expect a 6-game lead to hold up going into August. But I can't imagine, we're not even done with June yet, you know, until tomorrow anyway. I cannot imagine a 6-game lead holding up in a division with this many talented teams between now and the end of the season, October 1st. So, you know, Matt kind of indicated, look, unless there's a rotation starting pitching in Kansas City, Detroit, or Chicago that can really, really kind of develop the sustained excellence that the Indians' rotation has developed, there's nobody's going to be able to catch them. I find that very, very interesting. And I've never known Matt to be a homer. Matt is not a homer. He, you know, he's a guy, I'll tell you, right, you know, right from wrong, up from down, black from white. He's going to tell you the truth about, you know, where things stand for his teams. Oh, look at that. I just got a note from Anthony Fenech. Hey, Big Ben, if you want to go ahead and ring up Mr. Fenech, he just got done covering the clubhouse for the Detroit Tigers. So see if he's available to join us for the last few minutes to talk about the very same thing. And that is the race in the AL Central. But Matt's not a homer. And when he says, look, the way that Salah, and this is the key, that's always an X factor, and that is injuries. It is always an X factor. If Corey Kluber stays healthy, if Danny Salazar, who has had health problems, if Carlos Carrasco, who's already on the DL this year, if one of those guys, Trevor Bauer, and Josh Tomlin, of course, who had Tommy John, if one of those guys or two of those guys has any kind of an extended, you know, time down, if you will, because of injury, that changes everything. But assuming health, assuming the Indian starters remain healthy, is there anything that the Royals can do about it? Is there anything the Tigers or the White Sox can do about it in terms of trying to close that gap? That was Matt Underwood's takeaway from all of this. It's not a matter of can the Indians continue to separate. It's now that they have a 6-game bulge and a 7-game bulge and an 8.5-game bulge over the next three, do they have enough starting pitching to have sustained runs of excellence where they will catch the Indians is the question. And I do understand we have Anthony Fenech on the line. How about that? I thought we were going to be able to, or going to have to, I should say, push the Detroit Tigers beat writer for the Detroit Free Press to tomorrow's program because of the timing of the game today. But he just got out. Let's bring him on the air right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Anthony, how are you, man?
Good, Bob. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for squeezing us in here. You know, it's funny. Kush told me at the start of the show or before we started the show that the game was moving so slow you thought you might have time to join me at 4:35. And then sure enough, it ends right at about the time we wanted to bring you on, and you had to go and do your duties. So glad you were able to kind of get in here and just give us a little quick analysis after that drubbing of the Marlins today. 15 hits pounding out, 2 in a row over Miami, a nice way to bounce back from the weekend sweep at the hands of the Indians.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those games where you're kind of sitting in manager Brad Austin's office after the game thinking of, okay, what questions are there to ask? I mean, the Tigers really just, they just beat them up offensively. They scored four in the opening inning. They got home runs from Miguel Cabrera, Jared Sutwamakia, Stephen Moy. It was just a complete offensive performance. A bunch of guys with multiple hits. Daniel Norris pitched pretty well. So they seem to have shaken off the sweep by the Indians. But still, it still lingers a little bit because just the line of questioning after the game. Still talking a little bit about, you know, it was a 6-3 home stand, but those three losses were pretty big there to the Indians. So look, they're on a good note going into the 11-game road trip before the All-Star break. So we'll see if we can build off of it. But again, that starting pitching is just a little bit of a concern for me right now.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting you bring that up because I just had on Matt Underwood. He's the television voice of the Indians on Sports Time Ohio, and I asked him about this. Same thing you and I have been talking about for a few weeks now, that we kind of expect this to stay kind of a group together in the terms of the top of the division, that nobody's really going to pull away. And yet here we sit, even though it's not even the 81 game mark yet, which is the half point of the season, and not even at the end of the month of June yet, but the six-game edge that they have over the Royals and the 7 over the Tigers, I said, Matt, that probably can't last, right? And he said, is there a starting rotation on any of the other contenders in this division that can close that gap? Because the Indians are going to get quality start after quality start, and even on games where the bats aren't there, the starting pitching is going to help them win a lot of games that the other contenders who have to close that gap just don't have. And as you just mentioned, you're worried about the Tigers from that vantage point, the starters.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really can't say with any confidence that I feel like the Tigers can match the Indians in that regard. I mean, look, I think, you know, 1-2-3, you know, Justin Verlander, Jordan Zimmermann, Michael Fulmer. I mean, that's a pretty good top three. But the Indians can match that. I mean, with Corey Kluber, you know, Danny Salazar, Carlos Carrasco, and then, you know, the back two guys, Josh Tomlin and Trevor Bauer are huge upgrades over Mike Pelfrey and Daniel Norris. And although Norris was looking pretty good today, he showed some good stuff, and I think he'll be able to stabilize the back end for now, but will it be enough? I'm not certain. I think the Tigers are going to have to go get a starting pitcher if they want to compete in the second half because, like you said, I mean, the name of the game is starting pitching, and so many years the Tigers have had it, but for the past couple, they have not, and it doesn't look like this is one of the years where they have it. Now, they do have an offense, though, and their offense pretty good, as it showed today. They seemed a little bit more focused. I think there was a team meeting after the game on Sunday, just to kind of shake that off. I mean, it was a bad series loss. I thought they were going to take 2 out of 3, and they just got their butt kicked again.
Yeah, I didn't think they would win two out of three, but then again, I didn't think that the Indians would sweep either. We had that little roundtable with yourself and myself and Zach Meisel, and I said, I don't think anybody's sweeping the series. I think it's going to be two out of three, one or the other. I thought it would be the Indians. You thought it would be the Tigers. But, does it always come back to that cliche? And it is a cliche about great pitching beating great hitting every time. Because you're right. When you talk about this lineup, the Tigers lineup really takes a backseat to nobody. It is an extraordinarily explosive lineup. But that Indians pitching staff made it look very, very mortal and, well, pretty much has for nine starts now, for nine games, that they've played this season.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the Tigers, look, I've always said it. I've said it to you many times. I think the Tigers have a really good lineup. I mean, when J.D. Martinez is healthy, I think they have a pretty special lineup. I mean,
yeah, they do.
Just top to bottom. I mean, the guy, just good hitters. And I think they have enough starting pitching to, be in this race in some way, shape, or form going down the stretch. The only question is, do they have enough to be a serious contender? And right now, I would need to see some kind of an addition or some kind of an improvement out of Mike Pelfrey, something right now, because they've really been getting nothing out of their back four, their four and five spots. And, I mean, when I say nothing, six-plus ERA, and that's just not going to get it done. I mean, they're over a half run behind the Indians. I do think it's easy to say that good pitching is going to beat good hitting. But as this summer goes on, I do think the Tigers are going to win their fair share of ball games by slugging it out, kind of like they did here today.
Ausmus said after the sweep over the weekend, Anthony, and again, we got to remind everybody, the sweep is over now because they've just won two in a row over Miami and did so convincingly today with an offensive showcase. But Ausmus said after that sweep, good thing it's still early. And indeed, they've played the Indians nine times. They still have to play them 10 more times. And obviously, there's still well over 80 games left. But some of your colleagues in the Detroit media have said, yeah, right. And they kind of snickered, saying, look, this is just a mediocre Tigers team. They're 500 for a reason. It's what they're going to be. And it's time to start thinking about selling off assets. That's at least what some of your colleagues have said. Do you agree with that or no?
No. I don't think that's the route they're going to go, at least not this moment. I mean, really, the two guys that had the most trade value on their team are Francisco Rodriguez and Cameron Maven. I really don't see them kind of just they simply don't have the pieces to deal with that they did last year in terms of David Price, Johan Cespedes. They had a different kind of team last year. They were in a different situation. They were in last place last year, and they were really at a time when they really needed to infuse their farm system with some young talent. And they now that they've done that, like I said, Dave Dombrowski got fired because he didn't win a World Series, and I don't think in Al Avila's first year he's just going to be thrown in the towel here in late June. Again, I don't think they're going to make any kind of blockbuster move at the deadline, but I could see them, maybe making a small add to the rotation or the bullpen, something like that. But no, I do not agree with my Detroit media brother who should say it's time to sell off assets.
Yeah, and I don't either. I'll be honest with you. I don't either because, the team in the lead of this division right now, with that seven-game commanding, as it were, before the start of July lead, it's only an injury or two to a starter. And remember, Carrasco has been on the DL already. Salazar had to be shut down a bit last year. Same thing with Trevor Bauer. He's never proved he can go start to finish of a season effectively without getting tired. So, a couple of these arms start to either wear out or get hurt, and it's an entirely new division race. So I don't think they're going to do anything like that either, at least not now. Anthony, thanks, man. I know you're busy. You got to get your game story filed and everything else. Thanks for squeezing in a conversation. We'll talk to you again very soon, my friend.
For sure. See you later, Bob.
Thank you, Tony. There you go. Anthony, Tony Fenech, Detroit Free Press beat writer covering those Tigers, and that's all the time we've got today. Good conversation with Matt Underwood. I really enjoyed it. I hope you did, too. Really interesting analysis on NBA free agency as well. We'll do more of that tomorrow with Sam Amico of Fox Sports Ohio and AmicoHoops.net as we bring you the next extravaganza. Stay where you are. Miller is coming up with Drive Time right here on The Ticket.